Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Wesley J. Smith, who is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute, specifically with the Center on Human Exceptionalism. His website is discovery.org, and his Twitter handle is @ForcedExit. Wesley J. Smith has been described as the world's foremost critic of assisted suicide and utilitarian bioethics. And specifically, there was a new press release describing the problem of, or potential problem, of human genetic engineering, which supposedly is geared towards improving human lives. But Wesley J. Smith said, it may start with curing diseases, but it won't stay there. Wesley J. Smith, syndicated columnist and author and spokesman on behalf of The Value of Human Life. Why don't you wax eloquent on this human genetic engineering?
Hi, Jerry, and hello to your listeners. Well, it's very interesting. One of the things that has me so very concerned is that with little notice in the media and little real discussion, in the last, say, 5 years, scientists have learned how to engage in human cloning. Human cloning has actually been done through the same method as created Dolly the sheep. It's called somatic cell nuclear transfer. They did not bring the embryos that were created to birth, but they have successfully done human cloning. Secondly, a new genetic engineering, or they call it gene editing, process called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, I won't go into what that actually stands for, has been invented that can actually genetically modify very simply and easily any organism and any cell. And they have just, using the CRISPR method, they took a viable human embryo, they genetically altered a gene to test whether they could make genetic modifications in terms of illness, and then they destroyed the embryo. So there's the ethics of doing that. But the real thing that I'm noticing is, one, they push this as a method of treating disease, and of course it could be done for that. But as you pointed out, it's not going to stay there. There is a whole movement called transhumanism that seeks to use these very kinds of technologies to create a post-human species that believes in not only genetic engineering and, say, a therapeutic a genetic change, say, to prevent the kind of problem that Huntington's disease, just to grab an example, but to actually increase intelligence, to perhaps have blonde hair, whatever it might be that the genetic engineer or the person who hired the genetic engineer would want. And that gets us into the area of neo-eugenics, where we think we have the wisdom to decide what's a better human being and what's a lesser human being. And it's fraught with peril.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. Just this very day, I've been working on my weekly column, and I decided to talk about words and how important words are, and when words are used to kill and dehumanize people. And I was doing a lot of research about the Nazi era and how they dehumanized people, and a lot of the medical doctors were writing about things before Hitler even arose in Germany, about a decade or two before he arose, and they talked about things such as a life not worthy of living and so forth. And it's like, whoa, this is scary.
And that's why, you know, people will say, well, it's the Nazis. Well, and then people look around and they say, oh, well, we're not Nazis. We don't see people goose-stepping and saying, see, Heil, and it bounces off their forehead. But it wasn't the Nazis. It was eugenics. And this idea of a life unworthy of life came from a book written in 1920. That's before almost anybody had ever heard of Adolf Hitler.
Right.
And it was written by Alfred Hoch and Carl Binding. One was an award-winning medical doctor. One was a law professor. And it was called Permission to Destroy, Life Unworthy of Life. And they posited three categories of killable people. One is the terminally ill. Two are those they called the idiots in those days, which you and I would call developmentally disabled people, who they said were sucking the money out of the Reich and so forth. And the third were unconscious people. who they said if they woke up would, be living a life of misery. So you had this really noxious, toxic stew of thinking. One, they called it a healing treatment, that you're actually the killed person a favor. Now, we just saw that in the Charlie Gard case, didn't we?
Yeah.
Secondly, doing the families a favor, because, these families are going to be by these difficult people to care for.
Your phone is breaking up, by the way, sometime. Sorry about that.
Sorry. And third, you're doing the state a favor by not having the cost of care. In fact, they got very specific into it. And so this wasn't Nazi ideology. This was a denial of human equality. It was a denial of human exceptionalism. And whenever we say that one group of people, however we decide to categorize it, whether it's based on race, whether it's based on disability, whether it's based on any other invidious category, has a greater claim to life or a greater claim to our loyalty than another group of human beings, you are going to make it so that the lesser, deemed lesser, that's a false thing, all humans are equal, but you're going to make it so those who are deemed lesser are oppressed, exploited, and as you pointed out, even killed. So that the infanticide program that occurred between 1939 and 1945 was authorized by Hitler, but it wasn't a Nazi thing. It was the doctors driving this idea that they could help the baby, they could help the family, and they could help the society by killing disabled babies and so forth. And of course, and some used it, the T4 program, which was killing disabled adults, and then they began to develop the means for mass killing that they would later use in the death camps. But it's very important to understand the defense that, oh, it was the Nazis, doesn't play, because that can become a defense instead of an offensive argument. It's actually defensive, because people say, we're not Nazis. No, it's the idea that some people are better than others. That led to slavery. That led to eugenics.
Yep.
It leads to evil every time it's accepted.
You know, it's interesting. In terms of the research I was doing earlier today, one of your colleagues at the Discovery Institute, Dr. Richard Weikart, he wrote a book called The Death of Humanity. He's got a quote there from Viktor Frankl, who survived Auschwitz. And one of the things Viktor Frankl says is, I came to realize that the ultimate fruition that led to, or the ultimate ideas that led to Auschwitz, were not born, in Berlin and so forth. They were born in the school, in the academy. They were born in the doctor's offices. In other words, it was all those terrible ideas that we've just described about a life not worth living, before Hitler even arose. Hitler's the one who put it in practice, but these ideas were out there floating around in Germany. And it, like you say, it's a vicious stew.
Oh, again, let's not say it was just Germany. The eugenics laws, not the killing of disabled babies, but the sterilization of people deemed less worthy, the unfit, as they were often called. The German Nuremberg laws that did that were based on California's.
Whoa.
So, the idea that this was just Germany, again, is false. Eugenics really got its start in England, from Francis Galton, who was a cousin of Charles Darwin, who came up with this idea that came to be called positive eugenics. That is, we will try to induce the people who are the eugenically best, meaning people like me, right? But the eugenically superior people to breed bounteously. Well, one of the great villains of American history, Charles Davenport, who isn't taught nearly enough, he went over, met Galton, and this is in the late 19th century, and then he decided, well, I really believe in this, we've got to, if we can create better cattle herds, why can't we create better human herds, right?
Wow.
And so Charles Davenport started the Cold Spring Harbor with the funding by the Carnegie Institute, the eugenics center there, and that ended up developing into negative eugenics. And the negative eugenicists said, well, we'll never get enough of the right people to procreate bounteously, so we've got to prevent the unright or the immoral or the not the immoral but the unfit, the lesser people from procreating. And there was racism in there. There was the idea of moral deficiency. There were all kinds of issues that would be thought of as somebody who was unfit. And that led to sterilization laws in this country. And one of the great evil Supreme Court rulings in the history of the United States, Buck v. Bell,
yeah,
1927, Virginia Buck was a woman who was the daughter of a prostitute who was put into foster care and apparently raped in foster care, became pregnant, and the foster family put her into a mental institution to cover up what had happened to her. She gave birth in the mental institution, and the eugenicists that were running the mental institution said, aha, you have a daughter of a prostitute now giving a baby out of wedlock. She should be sterilized to protect the genome. You know, they called it something else then in those days. And it went to the Supreme Court, and 8-1, Virginia Buck was allowed to be sterilized by her government. She had done nothing wrong. She had committed no crime. She was sterilized. And what Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote, three generations of imbeciles is enough. And it is it's right out of Dred Scott. It is a pernicious, evil ruling. It's actually still the law, though it wouldn't stand up today, I'm sure. But again, it's not the Germans. The United States had a huge part in this whole eugenics mess. And some very surprising people. Helen Keller was a eugenicist.
Mm.
And I look and I think, what does she think? She wouldn't get the ovens just because she wasn't born with those conditions that she experienced because of the measles. Of course, we know Margaret Sanger was a pernicious eugenicist who talked about getting rid of the weeds. Teddy Roosevelt, George, it was a very progressive intellectual movement, and it came from the top down in the same way from the academy and from the higher levels of society, from the Carnegie Institute funding, the Rockefeller Institute funding, those kinds of things. You see the same thing today with bioethics, where bioethicists and we're moving into a more utilitarian rather than a sanctity of life bioethics in healthcare, where there's talk of assisted suicide and healthcare rationing and forcing people with a low quality of life off of this kind of thing. So it's very, very dangerous, and the issue isn't Germans or Americans. It's when the claim is made that some people are better than other people because of whatever category you want to create. That's when the trouble starts. It's only when we understand that we're all equal inherently, objectively, intrinsically, regardless of our capacities, regardless of our race, etc. It's only then when we accept that we can actually create a humane and equal society.
Mm. You mentioned earlier, and by the way, we have about a minute to wrap up. You mentioned earlier that there has been some human cloning, but nobody's been born from that, correct?
That's correct, but cloning isn't whether you're born. Cloning is the act of cloning is asexual reproduction. That is the kind that made Dolly the sheep was you take a skin cell, let's say that you're going to clone me. You take my skin cell, you take out the nucleus, you take an egg, a human egg, you take out the nucleus, you put the nucleus of my skin cell in the egg, and you zap it. And if the cloning works, it's still very difficult to do, but they've done it, then a new embryo is created because the qualities of the egg think it's been fertilized. And at that point, it develops normally like a fertilized, like an embryo that was fertilized. So the cloning is the act of creating the embryo. What you do with that clone, whether you research on it and destroy it, which is a taking of nascent human life, or whether you bring it to birth, is just the use of a cloned human being in a human context. The act of cloning is the act of somatic cell nuclear transfer or perhaps some other technology that could be invented, but not the birth. That's right. Not cloning. That's giving birth.
I see. All right. Well, we're basically out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. I should point out that in this office where I work, there's about 12 of us who share the same printer, and I noticed somebody had printed up another one of your articles, a different one than this one. So you're getting around.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Discovery.org and at Forced Exit for Wesley J. Smith, who's been with us right now on Vocal Point. Thank you, Wesley. God bless you.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. All right. Bye-bye.